Welcome to Founders Campfire. I'm Tran, the host of this podcast and a senior at Stanford. Over my 4 years here, I've built many ventures, from a nonprofit to a social app. Most of these ventures have failed, but by reflecting on and sharing these failures, I've been able to grow and build deep connections. My hope with Founders Campfire is to bring together a community of current and future founders to reflect, share, and grow. Today on Founders Campfire, we have Shoba Dasari. Shoba did the YC Accelerator during summer 2023. I reached out to Shoba in the fall when I was deciding whether or not to join the winter 2024 batch, and she gave me a lot of helpful advice about her experience. Today, she'll be sharing her experience with you all as well. Welcome to the show, Shoba. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Awesome. Can you start off by telling us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Shoba, grew up in Houston, Texas, and I guess graduated from Stanford really recently as well. But I think the main thing about me, especially from a professional angle, is that I care a ton about healthcare and current companies in healthcare. I'm sure we're going to dive into that so much more in detail, but grew up with a chronic condition, was a super interesting experience in my life, both from a perspective of just dealing with the healthcare system way more than any 12 or 13 year old ever should, and kind of almost as a weird coping mechanism, identifying things that I felt like were wrong with the healthcare system as a way to not think about the actual like sickness, but intellectualize it almost. And that has just kind of turned into this whole thing where I've kind of done everything under the sun in healthcare. Thought I was going to be pre-med, did all of the like really hardcore like wet lab research for a summer where I just like pipetted like 100-something numbers of things every single day. And then while I was in Stanford, did a ton of medical device stuff, health tech startup stuff, policy things, and had a couple of different forays into like education and big tech as well. Yeah. And then now I live in San Francisco, just as a fun fact, so that not all of this is about work. Super big into dancing. I've been dancing since I was 5, and it was Indian classical, but now getting into like salsa and all this other type of stuff. So just a fun fact there too.
I love it. I love the fun fact. So let's jump into one of the projects that you worked on during your time at Stanford. You're the author of a book, Hacking Healthcare, which discusses how tech can improve the healthcare user experience for patients. Can you talk about your motivations for writing this book and what that experience was like?
Yeah. So the way that it happened was very interesting in the sense that I just got a cold email from somebody on LinkedIn, or cold message from somebody on LinkedIn, who is a professor at Georgetown and basically was starting this program for people who wanted to write books. And this was right around when COVID started, and I was making a lot of decisions about whether I wanted to stay in school or take a gap year and do some other things, and took up this book project because I thought that it would be a really interesting way to, I mean, as a kid, always wanted to write a book. I envisioned that being much more of like a novel or something fiction, but I've always wanted to write a book and just thought it was a really cool opportunity. And with COVID, had a lot of time on my hands. So kind of ended up taking that up. And the journey was really interesting. I think honestly, that could be a whole podcast episode on its own, but started it off as something where I was writing about why I felt like this was also a broader question I was having at that time of, is medicine, like, is going into medicine and med school the best way to make an impact in healthcare? And wanted to actually write the book on that topic and interview a lot of people who were doing other things in healthcare. And it just kind of ended up being this really unintended career exploration for me, where I just got to talk to people who were in healthcare, which was a space I knew I cared a ton about, but were making impact in a lot of different ways that weren't just, hey, I'm a doctor treating patients. And as a result of that, kind of ended up falling down this rabbit hole about startups and digital health startups, and really found that I loved that world. And so one of the first jobs I got when I ended up deciding to take a year off of school was actually through somebody I interviewed for the book, which was actually really, really phenomenal. So high key, like really recommend writing a book if you're trying to get a job. Low key, it works really well. But yeah, it basically kind of ended up turning into this thing where I started to, over time, develop actually a pretty coherent thesis about what I felt like really would impact healthcare, which was around how the technology in healthcare is just designed so poorly. And building technology, like you think about consumer apps and you think about like Google and Facebook and how they're really, really designed to kind of like create those dopamine hits and really help people love that experience of using them. Instagram, also a great example. TikTok is the prime one. Kind of why not take some of those ideas outside of the like somewhat unethical like aspects of that? Why not take some of those aspects in terms of just thinking about healthcare as like thinking about the user experience of healthcare? And that ended up being like more of the thesis of that book, but really, really love the startup conversations I was having, and especially the conversations I was having with founders of companies. So that eventually turned into the thing that I spent the next year exploring when I took a gap year. And the book was just a really great way to do that exploration as well.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely agree on your first point. I think like for me too, through this podcast, it's like a nice capstone at the end where it forces you to sit down and reflect on the conversations that you've had. Whereas I would say like some of the other conversations that I've had with people is just like you have that conversation, then you might not revisit it. So I think for you, maybe talking to these founders and then having time to sit down and actually reflect on what they said was super important in your career.
Yeah, definitely. And I would shamelessly ask them for a career advice at the end of conversations that never ended up going in the book, but would just be like, hey, like, what advice do you have for someone who's thinking about this? And got some advice that I think about all the time, like even now. For example, there was this one founder, Pelu Tran, runs this company called Ferrum Health. Very much look up to him. And I remember asking him for career advice. And he was basically just like, if you're going to do something in healthcare, you have to think about the money. There's no way to do any impact in healthcare without money. Which was really interesting, and I think has kind of determined the trajectory of the way. Like, if I had like some sort of like overlying professional question when I was an undergrad, it was, "Hey, I care about this healthcare field. What's the best way to make impact in it?" And I think that particular piece of advice after that conversation really, really guided how I thought about that idea. So yeah, it was like honestly like a great way to just like get people to talk to you and then ask them for advice for yourself too.
That's awesome. Was there anything that the founders said that really surprised you?
So I think that money point probably would have been the main thing. Just I think most people, when you think about healthcare, you think about caring for patients and you think about that sort of thing. But frankly, and I learn this all the time with the company right now, is that you can't really do patient care if that's not profitable on its own. And really, like having to think about the money is the way that you make impact in a sense, because you have to figure out how do you deliver patient care in a way that is profitable? How do you deliver patient care in a way that isn't like negative margin? Because you can't help patients if you're running yourself into the ground. And I think like kind of fits into now the broader like market ecosystem about unit economics being more valued by venture capitalists and everything like that too. But yeah, I think that probably would have been one of the most surprising things. But I think another thing that was also very surprising was how much small things mattered. I have this really, it's one of my favorite stories in the book, and I'm still in touch with the guy. He used to be at General Electric, and he was on the team that was building their MRI devices. And one day he would go into hospitals and shadow and test whether his MRI devices were working, and found one day that kids were terrified. Like, they're big machines, they make a lot of noise, they're gray and loud, and kids hated them. Horrible experience for even the labs and technicians. And so he ended up creating these MRI machines that were super kid friendly, like painted like a jungle, like lavender scent everywhere in the room. And the technicians had a lot of fun because it was just a cute experience. The kids had a lot of fun. It was like an adventure. And one of the things that really stuck out to him was that kids would ask to come back like the next day. Like, it felt like a good experience. And it was literally like nothing about the underlying tech changed. It was just that they painted it and they added a little bit of like design elements, and it didn't cost that much, but it just changed everybody's life so significantly. Made the parents less stressed, made the kids super happy. The technicians just had an easier time with their job. And I think about that a lot in terms of how it's like the 5% of things you can do to just go overboard can just change the entire experience completely. I think that was also just a very surprising like takeaway and learning that was maybe more implicit.
Thank you for sharing that. Let's move on to the current venture that you're working on. Could you tell us a bit about that and how it got started after this journey?
Yeah, so current company is, it's called Flare Health. And the reason we named it that is that we're in the chronic disease management space. So we work with patients who have a lot of complex chronic conditions and are usually pretty sick. And flare is an interesting kind of pun because in the autoimmune disease world where we operate, flare, FLARE, tends to mean like flare up of your condition. It tends to be associated with this just negative experience. And the company is actually spelled FLAIR because that means like to thrive and to blossom and to just like really live your best life in some ways is the way we think about it. And so it's just like a reframe pun on the word. I'm super big into puns too. So very like love the
It's a good
name.
one.
But what we actually do is we work with patients who have chronic conditions. So these tend to be chronic conditions that are either of the cardiometabolic world, so like think diabetes, hypertension, obesity, weight loss, or in the autoimmune disease world. So these are like rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, gout, even fibromyalgia sometimes. So super like conditions that are associated with inflammation. And we work with the clinics who treat these patients, so primary care rheumatology, and integrate into their practices and provide their patients with nutrition counseling through a dietitian and then health coaching through health coaches. And the reason being is that we're essentially giving these patients a lot of additional support. We meet with them about once a month or once every 2 weeks, which is much more frequent than they'd get with their doctor, which is probably once a year, once every couple months, and really give them additional support in terms of figuring out how to manage their condition, what are lifestyle changes that they can make to really help themselves live a better life, what are foods that they should be eating, foods to cut out, foods to just eat less or more of, and just identify different ways that they can do the things they need to do in their life without being hindered by their condition, which is very, very personal to me for growing up with a chronic condition. And so that's what we're doing with patients. And we work with their doctors. So all of this is coming from their doctor. Their doctor has a good amount of input into the care plan that we design for them and everything, but it's just giving them a lot of additional support that their doctor just frankly doesn't have time to give. And yeah, the best part about the model is that we work with insurance and we actually make the clinic money. So the clinic is actually able to bill for the time that our health coaches spend with patients. They're making money and then they give us a cut of that. So the clinic is also very incentivized to really be an active participant in this entire experience because helps them generate extra revenue. Goes back to the point I said earlier about the money matters.
Oh, that's a good model. All right, so many questions. Let's dive into the first one. In the beginning, you said you're working in the chronic disease space, and you kind of talked about how you dealt with that growing up. But how did you fully understand like this was a problem and what the clinics are doing right now is not enough?
Yeah, so I grew up with an autoimmune disease and pretty much know the experience very, very firsthand. And a lot of what I was 13 when I was diagnosed, and it took about 2 or 3 years for me to get diagnosed in the first place. But even after diagnosis, I remember having this sense of, oh, like now I know what I have. It should be pretty straightforward to address this. And it wasn't. But rheumatology autoimmune disease is very complex in terms of all the conditions play out really differently and symptoms are really different, which is why it's hard to diagnose, but also why it's hard to treat. And I remember my parents and I sort of figuring out, okay, like we're gonna need to just cut out like a lot of meat, a lot of dairy, and see like what's just triggering the condition. And we kind of played around a lot with like my food and my exercise and my sleep and my stress to really find this like optimal set of conditions that would really help me recover. And I think one, that probably set me up to think about healthcare much more, or health, I think much more differently than the traditional system does, which is much more holistic, much more of, hey, the way you live your life does impact your health. But also, I think kind of realizing that we had to do that on our own and really just educate ourselves. And the doctor to me, I had amazing doctors, but very much because they were busy, because of all these just like higher level policy almost issues, systemic issues in the system, can only do so much, right? And the big motivation behind our model was how do we take the type of care that we think patients should get around lifestyle and nutrition and having a lot of support to really implement that in a way that doesn't add on more workload to a doctor because they're busy, they do so much, they have such hard jobs. We don't need to make their lives harder. And so we really try to take on, even in the design of our product, really try to take on as much as possible as we can from the doctor and give them pretty much the bare minimum that they need to do. And a lot of that also comes from just us having a really, really amazing care team as well. So that's
Awesome.
the idea.
Yeah. So speaking a bit about the care team, are you hiring other health consults to work directly with the patients? And how do you ensure that level of quality is high?
Yeah, I think that hiring is probably the most difficult but impactful thing you do as a founder. And we got very lucky in the sense that we got to hire some really, really, really great people. we're a team of five now. We have two health coaches and one dietitian on our team who are delivering care to patients. And they're phenomenal. They're also super involved in a lot of operational things and just helping us build out the company as well and not just doing patient care. So honestly, we hit the jackpot with the team that we have right now. But there's a lot of different things we looked at, and we were super intentional about our hiring process and defining what our values were and what we needed in early employees and kind of the ways and the limitations of our model, and being very upfront with people about, hey, like, we do work with insurance. That makes certain things harder. You don't have unlimited time with patients under our model because insurance only pays for a certain amount of time every month. But like, you get all of these benefits in terms of getting to work with additional types of patients and really increase the accessibility of the service and of health coaching as a field in general. We looked a ton at like cultural competency when we hired as well, of just, and what that means, it's a buzzword in healthcare, but what that really means is, can you work with patients who are of different cultures? And can we customize what we do? Can you ask the right questions to understand a patient's culture if you're unfamiliar with it? And then can you customize the offering you make or the suggestions you make to patients based off of that? Huge, huge priority for us when we hired. And we asked probably five or six questions in our, like, we had a pretty much an entire section of our second interview that was dedicated to that. So TLDR to your question is, we viewed hiring as probably the most important thing that we did, and we're very intentional about it, put a lot of thought and effort into what we were measuring and what we were trying to get from people or learn from people. And just, yeah, like, very, put a lot of upfront thought into that. And I think that's what paid off in terms of the really, really great team we have right now.
That's awesome. And then the other question is to your business model. So you mentioned earlier, I think it's been a theme throughout this podcast, like, money really matters. And so how did you arrive at this business model that you're currently at?
Yeah. So when I was in school, I actually spent a lot of time doing public health and health policy. I was a CS major, actually CS and ethics was my minor. So health policy was pretty out there in terms of just very different from like the coursework I was doing and a lot of other things that I was doing academically. But I think it's probably been one of the most impactful things in the sense that we're using a relatively niche set of insurance billing codes to make this service accessible to people. Those insurance codes are typically used for having a medical assistant call patients and ask them what medications they're taking and kind of checking like, yes, no, we have this on the list. And basically doing this process called medication reconciliation, which is just getting an accurate list of what medications a patient's taking. Super important for healthcare, super big issue. But lots of companies doing that. And we're basically taking billing codes that are used for that service and adapting that to what we're doing, which is not medication reconciliation. It is dietitians and health coaching. And relatively, like, insurance, every company is different, but for the most part, insurance companies don't cover dietitians. And they definitely don't cover health coaches. And so we were going into this thinking that there's a lot of companies on the market that do dietitian services or health coaching services, but don't get those paid, and especially don't get those integrated with doctors, paid by insurance, and especially don't get those integrated with doctors. And the reason that we were able to figure out that, hey, we can leverage these billing codes that are used for an entirely different purpose and actually make them work for this service was because I wrote papers about these exact billing codes when I was doing policy research. And it was this crazy, like, light bulb moment where my co-founder and I sat in front of a whiteboard for like 5 hours and we're just like, hey, these billing codes exist. We've seen companies that use them. Why don't we just like plug and play? And it was a really, really cool day where just like everything kind of came together and like all these random stuff I had done in the past made a lot of sense. But I think definitely was a pretty indirect kind of way to find that. But I think me going into policy, which doesn't exactly feel super aligned with like health tech some of the time, I think is in some ways this very unconventional, superpower is such a strong word. I don't want to use that word, but just like an unconventional like perspective on things that has helped us find just really interesting opportunities to innovate. And there's a lot of things that are happening in the policy world now where I look at that and I'll be like, oh my God, there's this really cool program that is giving much more money to primary care doctors. Let's go find all the clinics that are under this program and go sell to them. And if I wasn't as, I think, up to date with policy as I was, I don't think I would be able to put together those dots as much. And I think it's given us a lot of really like unconventional directions and just unconventional ways of thinking about the market that have so far seemed to be useful for the company. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really cool to hear that some of these things that you've worked on in the past and the experiences that you've had really built up to what you're doing now. I think a lot of students, including myself, when I come into Stanford, I have this 4-year plan and this list of like, okay, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z so that I can get to this current place that I want to go. Did you have something like that in mind when you were thinking of going into policy, or is it just like things kind of aligned?
Yeah, I mean, when I started Stanford, I had this entire 4-year plan. It was funny because I graduated a couple months ago and was going back and just looking at that as almost like this nostalgic exercise and was like, none of these things played out. Like, the plan was not followed. And I have this joke where the best thing I did in school was take a year off, but then the second best thing I did in school was come back. And the reason I say that is I took a gap year during COVID and worked at a bunch of different companies. I think I worked at like 4 different companies during that year. Some were health tech, some were ed tech, like explored a lot. And used that gap year almost as a way to do this thing I call hypothesis testing myself, where I would be like, okay, I have this hypothesis that I like healthcare. What's the best way that I can test that hypothesis? And you can tell I used to be a scientist too, but I would say, okay, I want to test whether I want to stay in healthcare. So let's go like anti-test that in a way. Like, let me go do education for a bit and see if I like this as much. And I did it, thought it was super fun, but missed healthcare. I went to work in big tech for a little bit. I worked in like ML for advertising. And I was like, every single day, I was like, oh my God, I miss healthcare. And I actually took on like 2 other jobs where I was like working in big tech and then also like 2 side hustles where I was like doing a bunch of healthcare research because I just missed it. And so I think I was just testing this hypothesis of like, do I want to do healthcare? And the gap year was a really great time to just test a bunch of those random hypotheses I had about myself. School in general was a really good way to test those hypotheses. But the main thing that came out of that gap year also was that I kind of decided to just let go of the plan. And as someone who, everyone who knows me before the gap year can attest, I was super type A, like stuck to my plans 5 years out, 10 years out, like live off my calendar type of deal. And actually just like making the spontaneous decision to take a year off with absolutely no plans was really, really great in terms of one, being more emotionally okay with uncertainty, and two, kind of showing myself I could figure it out, and that the uncertainty and the serendipity that came out of that was actually better than the plan I had in the first place. And yeah, post gap year, kind of gave up on the whole quote unquote plan and just thought about like, okay, what did I learn during the gap year? And one of the companies I worked at was phenomenal, like lot learned so much that I use on a day-to-day at Flare. The company was called Songbird. And I think there was a lot of questions that would come up for me when I worked there about the access and equity of the programs and the care that we were offering to people. So that's what kind of motivated me to be like, okay, here's a question that I'm starting to feel myself become a little bit more like excited by and obsessed with. Let me go try policy to like hypothesis test whether that's something I would love. And I do like love policy. Really considered it as something I would do straight after school too, but for a lot of reasons didn't do that. But I think still like one day would love to go work in government. I don't know exactly how that would work, but we'll figure that out longer term.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And then the last thing is that how did you jumpstart this startup career that you've had? And what role do you think YC played into that?
Yeah, I think C was awesome in terms of especially like all of the other founders in our batch. We'd sort of been exploring a lot of different ideas in the healthcare space. My co-founder and I kind of started working together probably 4 or 5 months before the batch, and we're exploring a bunch of different ideas. And I, for the most part, really liked that process of trying to identify, because the thing I said earlier, right, where things would happen to me that were healthcare related, and as a coping mechanism, I would just research them. And there were some things in my life that were happening around that point where I was like, oh, hey, I found some really interesting random opportunities just because like I had this one issue that ended up being this one like this issue that millions of other patients have too. Maybe there's a startup around that. And frankly, we explored a lot of ideas, ditched a lot of them, and like flipped around a lot, but entered into YC and kind of were like knew pretty strongly that we wanted to work with chronic disease patients. And it was a little bit of a chance to figure out, okay, what are the best ways to go after this specific problem, and how do we narrow down the problem around what type of exact thing do we want to do in this large, large chronic disease world? What diseases do we want to work with? What type of player in healthcare do we want to work with? Do we want to be direct to consumer? Do we want to be B2B? All of these questions where all of the other founders in the YC batch who had had like years of experience in healthcare were so, so helpful to figure out and still are to this day very, very helpful for us. I think that that's more on the company side. I think YC was also this like really, really great personal experience for me too. In terms of two things, I think one, YC's playbook is very build first, figure out the business model later. Yeah. And I think that was something that I thought just didn't apply as much to what we were trying to build in healthcare. And I think having the conviction around, hey, I've had enough experience in this field to know that I don't agree with this advice, even though it's coming from people who are 30 years older than I am or 20 years older than I am and do have a lot of experience in their own right, was, I think, a big confidence building thing for me, just to be able to like articulate that, like, hey, I have differentiated opinions on like the way I think the world works and I should stick to them. That was definitely one of them. But I think also just being around really, really phenomenal people who are world class was a big opportunity for me to like learn what that looks like and learn from that. Like, what does that lifestyle look like? What sort of things do I agree with and disagree about that? And how to think about the world, how to think about people, which is like, honestly, like much less transactional than you would think. It was just really, really interesting for me to just be around those people and absorb things like that from them. I think one of the things I found all the time was that every founder in YC, who especially the ones that I admired, were so, so generous with their time and were like always thinking about the world in this way of, I'm just going to give and something will come back to me one day, but I'm not counting my cards. Like, I'm just going to give to people. And by uplifting everyone else around me, like, that's what's going to, like, that's going to help me too, right? They'll come back one day with like some sort of really helpful piece of advice or opportunity or whatever, because like I helped them originally. And I think that was just this like really great thing I saw from some of the best founders in the YC batch that I have since tried to emulate. I don't know how good I am at that, but things like that, where there's just a lot of like really intangible things that I think have helped me personally too, just by being around really, really great people.
That's awesome. The story about how you took the advice but then disagreed with it, I think that's really powerful. And I think, yeah, you definitely can get a lot of advice from a lot of people, but it's really up to you at the end of the day to see what makes sense for what you're trying to do. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And then the last thing on this podcast, I like to ask my interviewees challenges that you face and your top takeaways from it, because it's definitely not an easy journey. And I think I want the listeners to understand that it comes with a lot of challenges, but if you're grounded in what you're doing, then you'll be able to get through that. So can you share with us a few challenges and top takeaways from that?
Yeah, this one's probably super vulnerable, but confidence for sure. I have always been someone who like second guesses myself and has had a lot of just like issues on that front. One of the biggest like pieces of advice I got from a really close mentor of mine like a couple of years ago was, hey, you're way too deferential and you just kind of need to speak up more. I think that in itself has been a challenge to come over, because it's sort of been like kind of the thing you just said about advice, right? Like, if you're not all that confident in your own opinions, and then like, or at least I did this a lot, then you take advice from all these different people without really questioning whether or not you agree with that. And then if you keep doing that, you kind of will end up in a place where you're just like, hey, I don't know how I got here. And I'm kind of miserable with it. And I think just building that muscle over time, I don't know really how I did it. I think it was just a lot of like trial by fire, to be honest, from a lot of different angles. But having a little bit more confidence, and that honestly, like, people can tell you like power poses and all these like hacks for confidence. And I think frankly, the only thing that's worked is to like do things that I felt like were worth being confident about. So building the company has definitely played into that, even though there were a lot of times in the early days where I don't think we felt all that confident about what we were doing. But now we're like, hey, like, we're actually very proud of this. And that's translated into personal confidence. But yeah, I think that's definitely like very like intangible challenge, maybe, is just like this like thing with myself. And then I think because we're more confident, like more things just like come to us or that sort of thing. Like, we almost hindered ourselves, or at least for me, I feel like I would hinder myself before because I wasn't. And then kind of in this process of doing things that I felt like were worth being proud of. The world just looks very different in a way that I don't really like know how to articulate, but it's almost like better things happen because I just see it differently. And it's like the same picture, but different lenses, if that makes sense. So that would be challenge number one. And I think I would say challenge number two is, I think, was like, and I mentioned this a bunch of times, I still have a health condition. And that also means that like, I don't want to play this game. And I have a group of founder friends I have who all have chronic diseases. Some are in healthcare, some aren't. But this is just a constant struggle of like, do you lower your ambition because you want to take care of your health? Or do you find ways to make both work? And I just don't believe in like trade-offs and opportunity costs. So I don't want to like play those games, abundance mindset and all of that. But I think that's like actually also been like a big personal challenge for me is, how do I not sacrifice on like ambition and working hard and all those things, but also like not sacrifice on my health at the same time? And a lot of that has just come from, I'm still figuring this one out, to be totally honest, but one of the best pieces of advice I got from this, from somebody from that founders group, is figure out what your non-negotiables are. And for me, that's like time to take care of my health. That's time to get enough sleep. That's time to cook myself food every week. That is going to work with like my body. And that's like time with friends and time with family. And a couple of other things too, but those are the main ones. And as long as those, clean room is also one of them for me, but as long as those non-negotiables are met, work can fill pretty much every other crevice, and that's okay with me. And so that's just like kind of this different way I've started to look at work-life balance, quote unquote work-life balance, which I don't believe in, but I think has kind of allowed me to get both of those things, at least so far. I've only been doing this for like a month or two, so data points are limited, but I think that was also just like a generally big challenge. Those are like more personal and not like about the company, but I think one thing I have learned is that me taking care of myself and my co-founder taking care of herself is like the thing that keeps the company afloat. And so that's number one priority.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And how can the listeners help you or get involved?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing is if you're interested in what we're doing at Flare, we aren't hiring actively right now, but I just like to meet people just in case in the future things make sense. So reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter too, which I'm trying to use more of. And yeah, other than that, you can check out a little bit more about what we're doing at our website, which is www.flarehealth.com. Reach out if you just like to learn more.
Thank you so much again, Shoba, for being on the show and sharing your most vulnerable moments with us. If you or anyone you know is dealing with autoimmune conditions and would like to help improve the patient care experience, please reach out to Shoba at hello@flarehealth.com. This concludes season one of Founders Campfire. Thank you so much to the hundreds of listeners who have tuned in. I hope the insights shared over the season inspires you to further your own path. I'll be taking a break to focus on some other exciting projects, but we'll be back for season two soon. In the meanwhile, if you have any feedback or suggestions, please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn.